All right, Ephesians chapter 6, and we're going to start at verse 1. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. So don't obey, but obey them in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and your mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, and thou mayest live long on the earth. So there's a promise that if you obey your parents, if you obey God's authority in the order of family, you'll live a long life. If you disobey, your life is going to be cut short. The reason for that is because parents want you to live a long life, and they give you rules that help you to survive. If you're disobedient, it's impossible to have a good marriage. It's impossible. It is not possible. If you are breaking God's commands just in the family alone, you will not be able to have your own family. So this is a real problem that a lot of people get married, and they are rebellious themselves. They left rebelliously, and they never did finish with their moms and their dads. And so then when you get married, you're a juvenile. You're still immature. You never did finish. You never did get completed. So honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise. What's the promise? Well, that it'll be well with you, and you may live long on the earth. You fathers, don't provoke your children to wrath. So one of the things that fathers do by their misbehavior, by their despotism, is they provoke kids to wrath. Maybe they'll do something and the kids are mad, but there's nothing to do because they're just kids. But it makes them angry. Well, if you believe your parents are perfect, you're not ready to be married. If you believe they're devils, you're not ready to be married. If you believe they're just people, if you believe they're an angel or a devil, you should not get married. So most young people get married, leave home, because either their parent, well, normally because their parents are devils, and can hardly wait to get away. You're never going to be married. It's not going to work. Absolutely will not work. You're unreal. It's an unreal picture. They are not angels. They are not devils. They're just people. The parents are just people. That is the sign of grown up. The only thing you need to grow up is to realize your parents were just people. You love them not because they're good, not because they're perfect. You love them because they're your parents, period. And if you get that, you're an adult. If you don't get that, you're a juvenile. So the young girl who often says, "Oh, my daddy called me a princess," she's not going to make it. Her marriage is finished. There's no possibility. No man can live up to that kind of nonsense. So a girl that has a father that indulged her, overdid it, and a mother probably who was kind of harsh, it's not possible. It's not going to make it. I can counsel with people like that all day long. They will never make it. Not going to make it. The Lord can restore, but you have to deal with that. But your marriage is lost. You're not going to have that marriage until you do deal with that. So get the papers from the back if anybody has just walked in. All right. And so being married is a matter of being an adult. That's all. Just being an adult. And it isn't the woman that has to be an adult. It's the man. The woman does not have to be an adult, but the man does. So if a woman is immature, that doesn't hurt. If a man is immature, that hurts. So unfortunately, if you're an immature woman, you might marry an immature man. That hurts. So there's the only problem with that. So if you were treated as a princess and you were never abused or, you know, whatever, and you just think life should be wonderful and great, you're not going to make it. So either way it goes, if you think your parents are perfect, you're going to be in trouble. If you think they're terrible, you're going to be in trouble. If you think they're just parents who love you but they have their flaws, you are an adult. That's all it takes to be an adult, is just to realize that other people sin and yet you can still love them. You can love sinful people. That's all. All you have to know is that, and you're an adult. That's what makes you adult, is you're able to discern and say, well, that's wrong, but I still love her. Well, that was good, and I hope I can live up to that. That's an adult. That's all. You just realize that life is made of good things and bad things, and you're going to do your best to do the good things and so on. Now, Jesus then comes into that picture as well, but you don't have to have Jesus to come to that conclusion. You can love a father who's worthless. You can love a mother who's a drug addict. You can love them. They're not perfect, but you can love them anyway, and that is healthy. There's nothing unhealthy about that, as long as you don't say to yourself, she's not really a drug addict, or he's not really abusive. You have to say to yourself, he did satanically, she did satanically. That should not have been happening. Jesus wouldn't have done that, but it was done to me. Nevertheless, I love them. You're healthy. That's all. That's all it takes to be healthy. So you can live with the most god-awful situations as long as you forgive. You're free. That's all there's to it. So child raising is not possible for a parent who doesn't grow up, because you're not a parent. You're chronologically 25, but you're emotionally 7. You're emotionally 14. You never grew up. So, we read down in the 4th chapter, you fathers, don't provoke your children to wrath. In other words, don't irritate them. Don't provoke them. A lot of fathers do that. They just provoke them to wrath. In other words, that child's going to be angry for the rest of his life because of the way the father did or didn't treat him. And so fathers aren't always aware that they do that by, let's say, beating them too much or trying to, or just spoiling them. That's also another way to get wrath. It's easy to mess up. It's easy to mess up. And moms can overindulge, but it's not as serious. It's not good, but it's not as serious. Moms can be, you know, rough on the kids. Kids get over moms. Kids get over moms. Kids will excuse moms, okay? Ah, she's yelling again. Ay, ay. It's nothing. It's nothing. It's not good. It would be better if she didn't. But they forgive their moms. You know why? Because they're convinced their moms love them. And then she just gets all exasperated, and they know they caused it, so they're okay with that. But if a dad gets angry at his kids, it can provoke them to wrath. That's different. So just the way it is. You notice the Bible makes differences here between men and women. They're not the same. We're not into unisex and all that. Men are different than women. They're held to a different standard. So the father is key to the family, not the mother. I know a lot of mothers think you're the key, but you're not. It's actually the father. If he isn't there, that's a problem. If he is there, but he's a tyrant, that's a problem. So fathers tend to just leave it to the woman. Well, just take care of those brats, you know, take care of those kids and so on. Not good. You fathers are the ones to discipline them, to train them, to teach them, not leave it to the mom. Now, I hope I made a point there, a strong point. Dads are critical in the family, even when they're losers, even when they've done wrong. Still, come and, you know, ask forgiveness or something. It's never too late. So parenting is a powerful thing. God's for it. He knows that all parents aren't nice. But the main thing is just teach your children, look, nobody's an angel. Nobody's a devil. That doesn't mean you didn't behave like an angel or behave like a devil. That just means you're not one. Then you're an adult. So that's what you want your kids to be able to say, you know what, Sally, I did do that. Or I understand what you're saying. Forgive me. That makes you an adult. If you don't forgive, you're not an adult. And you will never have a happy life. You just ruined your life. You cursed your own life. So fathers provoking their children to anger. If you see a child that's angry, you provoke that child. I'm sorry, you might want to say, well, they did it themselves. They did not. They did not. They're going to locate it in the mother or the father, and it's going to be the father. It's all understood. Yahoo! Yeah, oh, it can be not around. That's a provoking right there, because the father never called up or never said, you know, I'm in jail or whatever. They'll forgive anything, rape, anything. The kids will forgive, but what they can't stand is lying to them. You know, just come and say, okay, I did that. Forgive me. Boom, it's over. Because they always did love you. They just don't know what to do if you're telling them two things at once. And so you got to settle it for them, just like God. He reveals it. I'm not an angry judge. I am a loving father. He settled it. You know, he's not blaming the devil. God will say, I allowed that. But I want you to know my true heart toward you is to love you. And if a parent will say that, even if that child grew up for 20, 30 years, and the father never showed up, and at the last minute he showed up, and he was drunk and everything else. But if he says, you know what, I'm a no good so-and-so, but I've always loved you. I know I never showed it. That father will be forgiven. Are you hearing me? So kids are so flexible. They don't want to have a bad dad, but they don't mind if he behaved bad. They just want to have that he has some kind of decency in him. He had at least enough decency to say I wasn't decent. That's all. Do y'all see how critical this is? It's the same with God. God has to come, sooner or later, come clean on the deal. Hey, I know some of you thought I was too harsh. Some of you thought I was too easy. Let me just tell you something. Here's what I really am. And that's all. And all of a sudden, you're okay. You can forgive any sin. Any sin. How egregious it is. You can forgive it, but you got to come clean. Got to come clean. Just say, you know what? God wouldn't have done what I did to you kids. Since I had umpteen fathers and so on and so forth, I can just tell you, I didn't ask them to do what I just said. I went to them myself because I was a Christian. And the reason I could do that is because I didn't live with them. You know, the first guy was off after the one night, and the next guy left after a couple of years, so I didn't know them that well. Had I been with them, I would have hated them, no doubt. Because that first guy was, mafia. And he told me a story, and it was a pretty rugged story, and so on. But no big deal to me because I never grew up with him. He felt bad because he didn't raise me. I felt wonderful. So I was so glad you didn't raise me because I would be working for Jimmy Hoffa today. You know, I would be, buried in Lake Michigan with cement on my feet. So thank God, you didn't raise me. And I can forgive my mom for all that stuff, but the second dad, he was a ne'er-do-well and so on and so forth. And, no point in describing it. But he didn't last long either. And so he lasted a couple of years. And he even lied to me when I was an adult and went to see him and told him I loved him and so on. He even lied and said, I'm really your dad. You know, what a liar. He's not my dad. But Peggy and I just sat there on the couch and, it was amazing. I already have a dad. I know which one he is. And he was alive at that time. And, I already knew he's the guy that one night standed with my mom and so on. That's how I got here. Now, this guy's claiming he's a dad. He's a liar. He was a liar in the beginning. He's still a liar. But that's okay. I didn't stop loving him because of that. I just didn't want to get too close. We take a loan. I just did not want to get, close with him. Because my mom said he was a scoundrel, and he was, But it doesn't mean I don't love him. It just means I don't want to be close to him. That's all. But I was glad that he was out in California and at a great distance. They're all dead now. All the dads are dead. But the third one I did live with, I did hate him. But, it's just psychological. And then as things went along, I forgave him, even before I was a Christian. And then I became a Christian. And I realized, he's really an Adolf Hitler type guy. But, actually he taught me right from wrong. So I got to give him some credit for that. Because he's the only guy that ever stopped me. I would have gone way off the deep end. Thank God for that monstrous father. That he was not an anarchist. He was a tyrant. He was a despot. But I needed that. It was good for me to get in bounds. So you thank him. And I did. Genuinely thanked him. I thank God. First way, I thank him because you birthed me. Thank you. That's enough right there. Thank you. Second guy, you raised me for a year or two. Thank you. That's all good you've ever done, but I'll take that. And I meant it. I don't care what else they did. That was good enough because I wouldn't be here if the first guy hadn't slept with my mom and that was the end of that. That was good. I cannot ever say, I wish they hadn't done that. I'll never say that. I'm glad they, sinned and did all that they wrong. So I thank him. And I meant it. I'm not joking. To me, I would not be here if it weren't for those first two dads. And the third dad for being Adolf Hitler. Thank God I had a guy. Otherwise, we would have had nothing. We were already super, super poor, but we would even have been poorer. No plumbing, no toilet, no nothing. You don't have anything. And you're 12 years old. You know, you're already, you know, getting up there, and still nothing. So it was great. I mean, I thank God, you know, for that third father. He finally moved us in toward town. Now we had, you know, a house toward town. That was great, with paving on the streets. It was amazing. Not even a stone road. The stone road was a step up from our dirt road. We lived in the dirt road, see? So when we grew up, they were still delivering milk in milk wagons with horses, see? And they still, we had an ice box, which is a box. This is a box, and you put ice in it. That's it. So I grew up primitive. But you wouldn't know it today. I mean, I don't even think of those things. In fact, that was kind of romantic back in those days. I think of those days. They were great days. I had fun. I didn't know any better. I didn't know that you had to have men around. We had three families living in one house with no men. It was grandmother, my aunt, my cousin, my sister, myself, my mom. You know, we're all living in that one house. And Grandpa, Dick Ham. My name is Dick Ham, and I don't give a damn who I am. That was Grandpa. But he was the fourth guy. You know, and he didn't even live in the house. She kept him way out in the garage somewhere. And he only came and, you know, here and there. So we didn't have stable men around and so on. But you know what? As a little kid, you don't really care. I mean, that did not mean anything to me. I did not feel deprived or anything. I didn't know how anybody else lived because you're out in the boonies. You all understand? So you don't care. You just measure yourself. It was fun living out in the country. It was fun. You know, living out in the sticks. You know, cows go through your yard and all that. That's great. It's great. So, a lot of fun for me. But really, it was a horrible background. Horrible. You know, it wasn't a good place at all to do it. But in those days, you know, you didn't know any better. So, when you're a Christian, you forget all that. See, Christians, they just forget all that. I don't mean like forget it. I mean like forget it. Just forgive it. You just forgive it. It doesn't matter. Who cares how you grow up? It doesn't matter. There's nothing, you don't have to have all of that. When I met Jesus Christ, I died to this world. I died to it. Of course, didn't have a lot, see? There wasn't a lot anyway. It's just a, you know, a big gamble. But when I met Jesus, phew, it was over. I sold everything I had, which was nothing. I sold it all for Jesus, you see? I gave up all my lying and cheating. That's what I had to give up. You couldn't lie and cheat anymore. Which is nothing, you know? You know, all the magic tricks and all the schemes and the, you know, con artistry and lying and so on. They just gave that up. But it was nothing no big deal. It wasn't getting me anywhere. Anyway, I mean, I was surviving. Yes, I was surviving. I know how to survive. I know how to survive. But it's nothing. When I met Jesus, here's somebody that loved me. And I didn't believe that for 7 years, but after 7 years, I believed it. I didn't do it. I didn't try to do it. It just happened. So parenting is critical. You don't have to be God. And you may be a devil. But just tell them, all right, I'm not God, and I may be a devil. But I'm probably just a people. So I just want you to know something. Sorry that I wasn't so hot. That's all kids need. That is sanity for a child. That puts sanity into a child's mind. You're actually worse off if you had good parents because you thought they were good and they actually lied to you because they weren't all that good. Now you're expecting that from your husband. You're going to expect that from your wife because you have an unreal picture about how neat people are, and they're not that neat. So as wicked as my family was, one thing I learned when I was a little kid, I remember thinking my family was the, you know, worthless family. And then I went and I visited one of the kids that had a neat family. You know, their mom and dad was really neat. Until I slept overnight. And I heard them arguing in the middle of the night and I realized, my God, these people are awful. I think my family is more normal than this. You know, then I thought, well, that's just one family. I was mistaken on that one family. So now there's two rotten apples in this barrel. But then I stayed with another kid, you know, and I realized, oh my gosh, there's more. Then pretty soon I began to wonder if there are any good apples in the barrel. Now that helped me a lot. That was really good to see the neat kids who had the money, who had the, you know, they had the nice Christian moms and stuff, and everything was nice. Until you got inside their family, and you realize, whoa, they're no better than we are. That was amazing to me. I mean, that was a shock to me. Because I thought, you know, some people were better off. They had nicer moms, nicer dads. So you get close. And so that was good. I remember doing that. That was an eye-opener. Do y'all know what I'm saying? I don't know what kind of experiences you had. But I know in my case, I felt, well, I wish I had a mom like her. I wish I had a dad like him. And then, you know, you find out, whoa, you know, they're all kind of not so perfect, you know. And the minister, and you know what, you get disillusioned as you go through life. You know, and I had my illusions when I was a kid, and anything was better than what I had. But it turned out not to be so. It turned out to be, it's not such a good deal. Then you read the first chapter of Genesis, you know, the third chapter where they get booted out of the garden. You realize, that story is over. That story is over. There is no Garden of Eden. So at a very early age, I would say by the time I hit first grade, I already had my illusions totally gone. Already. In the first few years of my life, they were all gone. I remember being on the playground, being beat up by this kid, and I remember the teacher was standing just a few yards away, not paying any attention to my cries, help, you know, they're beating me up. And I realized there's no justice. I didn't know that word, but that's what I knew. I knew right here, I hate this world. And I know, you know, if I'm going to go to school, I'm going to have to defend myself every day. So I got several ways I can do it. One, use my wit. Two, run real fast. Three, develop some muscles. Well, I ain't going to do that because I'm not big and strong and so on. So I learned to outwit the big guys, get them on my side, and head the gang up. I mean, I just did that through my wits. That was just pure survival. There's no virtues in it, no nothing. It's just, how do you survive? How do you go through the school without getting killed? That's the way I viewed it. I'm sorry. You know, because in my school, people did things. They were rough. People did things. So, you know, for a little kid, it's like a panic. You know, it's like, how am I going to even go to school and survive the day? Because the minute you walk around the corner of that building, someone's right there to beat the tar out of you. And they're going to chase you all the way home and beat you all the way. I mean, I'm just telling you, you got to survive. You got to figure out how to do it. Y'all? See what I'm saying? So school isn't a lot of, like, oh, isn't it wonderful? Little Alice is going off to school. It's not so wonderful. She gets to school and they say, fatso. And she immediately is outside the group. And she feels estranged. And they don't like her. Come home crying. Mommy, nobody likes me. And so on. It's traumatic for kids. It's not easy. So I remember my mom, I remember Janice Lepper. First grade, never went to school before in my life. First grade, I'm sitting on the back of the couch. I know I'm wearing a red and white polo shirt, you know, whatever those shirts are little kids wore in 1940. And I remember sitting on the back of the couch, and she said, you're going to school today. I don't want to go to school. You know, I remember that. And I remember she said, it's okay. Maybe we can get someone to go with you. Now, that was a good idea. And so she called Janice Lepper, same age as me, but Janice was not scared. And so, Janice, get over here. So Janice walked me to school, and I felt a lot better. My little lunch bucket. I was scared. Huh? I don't know. You know, little kids don't know, but she wasn't crying. She wasn't scared at all. For her, it was fun going to school. For me, it was a terror. I didn't want to leave my mom. You know, I was safe right there. I don't know why I told you all that. All right, so there's parents should read the Holy Scriptures to their children from the earliest age. Never had that, by the way. But parents should, and I did with mine. What a difference it makes. Parents should read the Holy Scriptures to their children from the earliest age, even as infants. You say, well, what good does it do to read to an infant? I'm going to tell you something. There's a lot going on when you're reading the Bible to an infant. Number one, They're seeing you open a book up. They don't know what it says, of course. They can't read or can't write. They can't do anything. But they realize you are doing something important. And every day you do that, You see, it's sinking in. Little kids are so smart. They're watching every move you make. They don't know what that book is, but that book has value. It's something in their life. They see you opening it up. They're sitting on your lap. You're holding them. They're feeling good. And you're opening this book. And you start reading. Very soothing to a child. Very soothing. And you're reading it right into their spirit. They're hearing the tone of your voice. They don't know what words are. They're hearing a lot of things, and they realize every day. And when you read it, you go like this. You say to the child, we're going to read the Bible right now. And they hear that over and over and over again, and they begin to get the word Bible. You are training them from the earliest moments. In fact, Peggy and I actually did it before the children were born. We did it when they were still in the womb, and I would sing to the children, and I would speak in a normal voice, not, hi, kitty, kitty. I didn't do that. I spoke in a normal voice to the child as though they were an adult. Spoke right to them. Hey, when you come out, you're going to see that we're not perfect parents or anything, but still, we love you, and we're going to do the best we can. And, of course, that's not always that good, but you're going to like us anyway, and God has put you in this home. I just would talk to them in a normal voice, saying stuff as though they were an adult. And then when that child came out, we already knew each other. They heard my voice. They heard Peggy's voice. They would hear us. We put music on, we read scriptures, we sang. That makes a huge difference in child raising. I can just tell you, all of our kids were content. They grew up that way, they're still that way, they're calm. They're not thrown by what other kids are thrown by. They're not anxious and have to go and sleep with somebody or whatever because life is so tough and difficult for them. They grew up in a great home, nice home, you know. They thought it was wonderful. As I said, I grew up in a lousy home. I thought it was okay. I didn't even know. Looking back now, I realize it's no good. But at the time, the only thing I didn't like was that outdoor toilet and the rats were this big. You know, that I remember that. I remember looking out the back window and going, I ain't going out there. It's snow that's this deep. It probably was just a few inches, but that was this deep. And it was way out there, which is probably about, you know, 20 feet back. You know, but to a little kid, you're little, everything is big. It's immense. I looked out there and saw the rats, and I know they're going to bite my bottom when I get out there. I'm not going out there, and there's spiders under that hole, too. So the spiders will bite me, and the rat will nibble at me, and I hated going to the bathroom. I did not want to go out there, you know, especially in the middle of the night, just wet your pants, because you're not going out there. So I grew up a little bit dysfunctional, because I ain't going out there. I might go around the corner of the house, but I'm not going to go out there. And it stinks, too. That's another thing about those outdoor toilets. Even if you move them every once in a while, they still stink. So you grew up with a lot of traumas as a little kid, but you take it in your stride, right? Because there's nobody there to take care of you or anything. You're just kind of on your own. I told you there are no men. And my mom's working. My aunt's working. And, you know, so you really don't have a lot of people looking out over you. You're just kind of on your own. And it's not all that bad because kids are adaptable. Amen? Kids adapt. They just adapt. They don't know any better. Anyway, this thing of reading the Bible to your children, that's the greatest thing you can do as a parent. Put the child in your lap. Read clearly. Read distinctly. Don't read in a baby voice. Tell him or her that this is God's holy word, even though they may not understand. Okay? Then, do this every time. Every time you read it, say, this is the Bible. This is God's Bible. Read the Psalms, read the Proverbs. They're great. Now, maybe the child's not getting a lot out of it, but you, the parent, are. You need to school yourself before they catch you. You got a couple of years before they're going to really catch on. So, I knew that. I was not a Christian when Kara was born at all. But I knew I still had a couple of years before she'd catch on or she'd figure me out as a phony. And I remember talking to God, whom I didn't believe in, we got some time here to work on this. Because I don't want this little girl to grow up like I did or, you know, whatever. Let her have a better shot at it. And I want her to like me. I like little kids. I always liked little kids. I always got along with little kids. And so I knew I was going to like this dad thing, but I didn't want to be a phony and a fake. And I didn't want to tell the truth either. So I knew I had to change. I needed some change. Like, Jesus, better do a quick work. If you're really there, get to it. Go. Also, show them pictures. Little kids love pictures. Now, the book that we used, which Peggy has pointed out, she probably read it more than I did, but I bought it. So I'm the one that went to the bookstore and found these books. And it was a book, and I tried to find it tonight because I can't find it, but it was pink. It's or yellow. It's either pink or yellow. But I remember it was light-colored, and it has pictures in it. So you have a page with a picture, a big picture on the page, and then, you know, this 35 words or something there, and you read it. And the kids love that. They love that. So that was called The Bible for Little Eyes. The Bible for Little Eyes. And it really wasn't a Bible. It was just simply a few stories out of the Bible, probably 30 or 40 or something, and maybe 52. I don't even know how many it had. But they liked the same picture and same story every time. Just keep doing the same one over and over again. That's so important with children. Bedtime, number two. And oh, by the way, we didn't have arch books at first. Anyway, I want to read now from Deuteronomy, 6th chapter, and I'm going to begin at verse 4. Deuteronomy chapter 6. This is a great... And when I first read this, it changed my life. I knew when I read this, this is what I was going to do. I knew it. I knew I got to do just like it says here. Now listen carefully to what it says. 6, 4. This is, oh, by the way, this is probably the most famous passage for Jewish people in the Old Testament. 6, 4. Now, these are the commandments, statutes, judgments, which the Lord your God has commanded to teach you. What for? Why is God teaching you? So that you might do them in the land whither go you to possess it. So he's teaching you to do something. Teach to do. Teach to do. Teach to do. So when you're taught something, you're supposed to do it. You're not supposed to think about it. You're not supposed to grasp it. There's no like big talk about it. Just do it. So that means it's up to God who teaches to make it a do. You know, don't teach it in such a way that you have to think. Make it a do. So you see, a parent today wants to be friendly with the child. Then there's nothing to do. No, you tell them what to do. This is right, that's wrong. This is good, that's bad. That's the way I taught my kids. I never said, now there's 15 ways and you choose one. I never did that. That's silly. I just told them, we're right, everyone else is wrong. This is the way to do it, this is the way we do it in this family. That's the way it's going to be. That is what a child needs. Even if you're a Hindu, teaching your child that Hindu's correct, it's still the right way to do it. Why should they have a parent that doesn't know anything? So I don't mind that the Hindu tells them that Hindu is the best way. That's fine. But when they get older, I'll argue with them. I'm not arguing with them as a kid. Do you hear what I'm saying? I'm not going to argue with them as a kid. So let them grow up in that, whatever it is. But I told my kids the truth as I knew it, because I'm the only thing they got. So it's no good for me to say, I probably don't know everything, so just kind of hunt around for yourself. That's no good for a child. Why would they get a parent that was stupid? So I told them, it just so happens your parent knows everything. This is right and this is wrong. What I say goes. You know, that was the kids like that. They didn't feel bad about that. They admired that their dad and mom knew everything. Little kids are like that. Little kids believe you know everything. They are stumped when you don't know. Like, what? Daddy, who made God? I don't know. That would stump a little kid. What? Then what are you doing being a parent? If you're a parent, you ought to know everything. You see? And they're asking an obvious, straightforward question. To a little kid, that's a piece of cake, because you're dad and mom. You know. I don't know, but you guys know. So you don't want to ever tell a little kid you don't know. You might say, you know, something like, oh, that's a good question. Let me go and pray about that. Call the pastor or something and get the answer and tell it to him. But don't tell him you don't know, because you're the parent. Did you hear me? And that's why I teach you so you can teach them. That's why I teach wives how to be a good wife, husbands how to be a good parent, you know, because you got to learn from somewhere. And if your own parents didn't teach you, where are you going to learn? God takes the responsibility. It's my job. My job is to help you politically, economically, socially, and spiritually. But most importantly, it's just the spiritual. But it also could be all those others as well. Sometimes you have to help people to, what are they going to do with all the money when I drop dead and I have no heirs? Well, you have to help them. So a pastor really should know a lot of stuff. If you're going to be a leader of some sort, you should be one. And if you don't know anything, get one who does, like God, and ask him and study and show yourself approved. Do you see what I'm saying? This is one of the problems today in the world. Nobody seems to know anything. Everybody says, well, it's all uncertain. We don't know anything. Well, then don't be a parent. Don't be a leader, because little kids don't need those kind of leaders. They need a leader that says, this is right and this is wrong. This is the way to go. Don't go that way. Very simple. So I'm not into that kind of, you know, liberal, we don't know the answers kind of thing. I don't believe in that. I don't believe anything has no answers. I believe everything has an answer. I believe there's a right and a wrong, and it's clear. Did you just hear what I said? As confused and as gray as you think this world is, I don't. I don't believe it. I don't believe there's anything gray. I'm sorry, I don't. I read the Bible, it's black and white. So the Bible has all the answers. Now, I'll agree there's some things you may not know, but then go to Jesus and find out. Go to the Bible and learn, because there are no gray areas. Well, I don't know if I should murder him or leave him. Okay. To you, that's a gray area. For me, it's easy. Murder. Because you're not going to divorce, so murder. No, there are no gray areas. I tell you, if you seek the Lord, you know what the answer, I've told you 100 times, what the answer is, you know, should I stay and murder him or should I leave and divorce him? The answer is grow up. That's a third possibility. How about growing up? You hear what I'm saying? How about growing up? If it's the man, it's because he should have been the leader. And if it's the woman, she shouldn't have picked such a poor leader. You see what I'm saying? So nobody's innocent there. There's no such thing as, well, I don't know, I married him and he deceived me. He deceived you? Did he deceive God? Well, no, not God. Did you ask God before you married him? And did God lie to you? And they realize right there they're going to get caught. Because if you'd asked God, he'd have said, don't. He'd have said, wait. He's not mature. How many know that you marry an immature man? All the men that you marry are immature. That's just sort of the way it is. So the woman has no excuse for marrying an immature man. You can tell her, oh, but I love him. Well, that's great. That's neat, but that's meaningless. Love has no meaning at all. What's that mean? What's that mean? Well, I know he has a few flaws, but I think my love will pull him out. Whoa, we are dealing with big illusion. Your love is not going to change any male. No man I've ever known will ever change because of love. Love does not change us. Love is not pressure. What do you think? Love is control, pressure? Well, he'll just see what it's like. He's never been loved, so if I love him, I know he just got out of jail, but if I just kind of love him, he's guys don't grow up. They don't. They don't. God can get him, but he'll break him. Then you get love after that. The first act of love is a wacko. And that's why that third father was good for me. Because that third father stoppeth me. He did. You know, he was 250-pound football-type player, and he stopped me dead in my tracks, and he was not at all adverse to spankings, which was with the belt, take downstairs, pull your pants down, and beat you with that belt. And that makes you attentive. That gets you to attend to what he's saying. It also gets you to run away from him. You don't want to go, but he will spank you again if you run, so you don't. Then you can't run like that, but I needed that. That was so good for me. Did I hate him? Yes. But I also later respected him for doing that, because I saw God, even though I didn't believe in God, I saw that God used that man to stop me. Thank God for the law. It wasn't love. He didn't love me. He never put his arm around me, never kissed me, never did any kind of thing like that. I don't care. What he did was good for me. That was very good for me. I needed that. I needed that. So I thank the Lord for that. All right, bedtime stories, Bible bedtime stories, are a wonderful tool for parents to use for young toddlers age 2 to 5. Now, I brought some. So here are some Bible stories. Here's one, The Baby of Bethlehem. And you get these little storybooks, and, you know, little kids can look at them and read them while you're reading the story to them. Now, they're 2 to 5, so they don't read. I know you can make them read it to 3, but, you know, forget that. Just read it to them, even if they could read. Don't. You do the reading. Let them hear your voice. Hold them in your lap. Let them feel safe and secure and spend time with you like that, reading one of these books with words and pictures. They don't care about the words, but they like the pictures. Okay? So you get these books, and they have words on one side often and pictures on the other side, and little kids just study that, and while you're talking words, they're looking at it, see? And they're getting a lot out of that because a word is worth, a picture is worth 1,000 words, they say. Well, whatever it is, it's a lot. And little kids love that. That's their favorite picture because you were holding them when they read that. That's very powerful for them. So read these every night. This is one, The Baby of Bethlehem. Most little kids like baby stories like this, boys and girls. Then here's another one, boys like this, David and Goliath. Oh, that's a great story for kids. And so you read these. We read all these to our kids, and we have hundreds of them. Then Samuel, the Last Judge, stories that Jesus told. They like those. And Baby in the Basket. But here's the trick. Don't read it one time and then go get another one. Read it all week long. Read it for 2 weeks. And they'll tell you when they don't want to read that one anymore. But as long as they want to hear that same story, they're picking it up and memorizing what you're saying. They're hearing it over and over again. The baby in the basket. And then the next time you read it, you say, the baby basket. No, you didn't say in the. They heard. They realized you didn't know the in, or the you left off something, or you didn't say it with your voice raised. They're not only listening to the words, they're listening to the inflection. They're listening to the commas. They hear it all exactly as you gave it to them. So do it the same way each time. And the baby, Jesus said. And they like the way you said Jesus. And they like that, you see. So don't change that. Little kids feel great when it's the same old thing, very secure. They don't like surprises. Surprises are okay, but it kind of scares them, but then it makes them laugh. But they really don't like that. They like it to be, Johnny, tonight we're going to do this. They like to hear it again and again and again until they get it. Then you can go on to something else. So I would not be at all averse to buying 4 or 5 or 6 or 10 of these, but don't read them all. Read them one at a time until they get tired of it or until they've had enough of it. Then say, would you like to hear a new story this week? And they like, now they got the idea, every week you get a different story. And you hear it 7 times. It's great for kids. I'm just telling you, raising kids, they love it. Hello, how are you? Fine, how are you? They love those kind of rituals. They love those kind of brush your teeth this way. And when I was taught that, I remember the way they taught us, I still do it. You don't ever share a glass with anybody, including your parents and your brothers and sisters. I know that they taught me that. Well, I never did. And don't use anyone else's towel. I never have to this day. I will not. If somebody else has a towel, I'm not going to use it. You know, because I was taught that when I was little. And those early lessons, they go in deep. You don't know any better as a little kid. And they called, there were such things like germs. Whatever those were, they were bad. Germs will get on you. And that's bad. That leads to disease and hospitals and needles, whatever it is. I was scared. And so, to this day, I will not drink after Peggy. I don't care. Even if I would kiss her on the mouth, I'm not going to drink after her glass. No way. Now, some people will feed each other. I can't do that. Because I remember being taught that. When you're taught that, you don't do it. So, little kids love that kind of security. That's the world I'm still living in. That's the world I'm still living in. So, all these Bible books are great. The next kind of books are what Peggy called the arch books. Arch books, and we have 100, we did, I think we've given a ton of them to Carr and whatnot. But these little books are really great, and what I like about them is they're iambic pentameter, right? So, Jared, a lad just 9 years old, was full of pep and very bold. You see that? That's iambic pentameter. Da 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 da. And it's just written in the same little rhythm, so the kids are not only getting the words, but it's not prose, it's poetic, it's poetry, and it rhymes. And little kids love that when it rhymes. And they love to say it, even when we have communion with our young people, and there's always, 10, 15 kids there, and they're only 2 and 3 and 5 and whatnot, but I'll go like this. Our Lord Jesus Christ in the night in which he was betrayed, he took. And then I'll pause, and they'll all say, bread. And they know it because they know what's got to come. And then I'll, and kids love to show they were listening. They don't even know what you're saying, but they remember bread. So they don't know what it means. You know, but it's so powerful to them. And he took the cup and they love it when you don't know, because they know. They know the answer to that. They love to chime in. I'm just telling you, raising kids is a joy. It's a delight. And God does the same thing. He'll leave the blank to see if you can fill it in. He does that just to check you out. Because he knows you know. And, you know, Jesus Christ died for you, me. You know, I love it. Kids love to do that. So anyway, these arch books are great. And after a while, if a child doesn't know how to read, start with an arch book. Because not only now do they have the text, but they have words that rhyme, and therefore it's real easy for them to get it in this little sing-songy way. And they actually can read without even looking at the words. Because they're not reading the words. They're actually reading the picture, and they just remember what it says because they saw that picture every time you read those words. Great way to encourage kids to read. Otherwise, they're stumbling over it. So you learn better. I'm sorry. You learn better by just reading. Just read to them, and as you're reading to them, they're learning how to read. And if the person is expressive, all the better. Children love it when you have some lilt in your voice, or when it's mean, it's, he said. They love that. That makes sense to them. And the ogre said, no. And they love that kind of stuff. Do y'all understand this? This is a little kid world. I'm sorry that you're a big, sophisticated adult, but you're wrong. When you're dealing with little kids, you got to get down on a little kid level. When Jesus Christ came down to earth, he did not speak heaven talk. He spoke heaven talk in earth language. He brought heaven to earth and adapted it to you. As a parent, one thing you have to learn to do is crawl. When you're a parent, that little kid is way down there on the floor. You got to get down there. You're at the same size as that little kid. Get on the floor, and they will pull you down to them. Daddy, come on down here and play. I can't. I'm too old. They don't care. It means nothing to them. Get down here. You love me. I know you do. Get down here on the floor with me and let's tickle each other. I can't because I'll never get up. It's okay, Dad. Get down here. And the little kid wants you down on their level. You can't be way up here like this. It's too far away. It's too officious. They like lap. They like close to. They like intimacy. So they like you down on their level. Little kids are great. Little kids are great. All these things filled Jared's being with wonder at the things he was seeing. You see, little kids are into that. They love that. So here's another book. Here's for older kids, so I'll get to this in a minute. That's for young kids, and there's, 100 books, 200 books that you could go out, and they're safe, they're good. You can get them in most Christian bookstores. If you can't, call us. We've either got them or we can tell you where to get them. There's a great, great resources. Read each night when the children go to bed. That's the best time. This is still in two. Just before or after you pray. Now, you might pray first and then read, but they might fall asleep on you. So if you want the prayer to count, pray first. If you want the book to count, read the book first, whatever you want. But kids will fall asleep with your voice and your love and your safety there and your security. They're getting a lot more than just Jesus in heaven. They're getting that as a freebie along with your love. So they don't know which one's most important, but they're getting them both. They want you to be there. They don't want God to be somewhere upstairs and you to be downstairs. They want you all to be kind of like together as one thing. So when they're hearing the Bible story, learning how to pray to God, they're also having you right next to them. Which is most important? You don't have to know. They're kids. But they're both going in. You're reinforcing them that this is heaven on earth. I tell you, when our kids grew up, I believe it. I'm sorry. I believe it. I believe it was heaven on earth. In my family, in my house, I believe it was heaven on earth. It's just like, couldn't be any greater. There couldn't be any more greater joy than having kids in the house. It was great. I wanted 5. Peggy wanted less. So we ended up with less. So we got 4 anyway. And but I want to have a ton of them. You know, just the more the merrier. That's gobs of kids. So thank God for Kara. So that was great. She gave seven, just in case nobody else had any fill in. No, it's great. Little kids are great. And one thing, they support each other. Kids are good. I like them squabbling. Oh, another thing, I always wanted to have an uneven amount so they would never get into a deal, because it would always be 3 and 2 or whatever. You know, I didn't want it to ever be even, because then, you know. So I liked having an odd amount. So that's why I wanted either 1, no, I didn't want 1, or 3, or 5, or 7. You know, just some kind of an odd amount so that they could never gang up on each other. It's all silly. That is not in the Bible, by the way. That's just me talking. Bible Gems, that was the first little set of books, and Arch Books and Bible for Little Eyes I didn't have. Another good one is Hurlbut's Illustrated Bible Stories. Hurlbut's is a thick book, but it's all Bible stories in it. And it's as old as the hills. It goes way back into the 20s and 30s when they were first producing it. But it's a great book, and it has neat pictures inside of it. 3, some books should be read. Oh, did I read Ephesians 6, 1 through 4? Yes. Did I read 2 Timothy 3, 14? All right. 2 Timothy. No, but I'll get to Deuteronomy in a minute. Yeah, I didn't get back to that. I didn't get to that. 2 Timothy 3, 15. 2 Timothy. Here we are. 1 Timothy. 2 Timothy. What did I say? 3:15? Oh, 14. Yeah. But continue, he's speaking to Timothy. This is Paul speaking to Timothy. But continue you continue, in the things which you have learned. You have to learn these things. You don't just know them. Somebody has to teach them to you. Continue thou in the things you have learned and hast been assured of. That's what kids want. Surety. Certainty. They don't want to hear somebody say, I don't know. You always tell them you know everything. Even if you don't, as I said, just tell them you're going to go and pray about it or ask Jesus. That's what I would tell my kids sometimes. Look, I don't know the answer to that one, but I'll tell you what, Jesus will know and I'll be right back. I'm going to ask Jesus. They like certainty. I like to know that life makes sense and it works. Knowing of whom you have learned them. So where do you learn everything? Well, you tell them. Daddy at one time didn't know anything either. I learned it from Jesus. Now I'm telling you. They love that kind of thing. They don't know who that guy Jesus is, but they know it's somebody out there. And Daddy likes him. So it's cool with kids. They're into that. It's okay. All right. Number 3. Some books should be read night after night until the child begins to memorize the words and the pictures. This will be a basis for you explaining God's word and God's ways to them. They will learn to ask questions and develop a Bible-based relationship with you. Mommy, how big was Goliath? You know, whatever. That's great for little kids. They can be as inquisitive as they want. Well, how tall is Daddy? He's not that big. He's big, Mom. You know, and these are great conversations with little kids. They're making sense out of their world. They're taking it seriously. Don't blow them off. Really important to a kid to answer all these questions. Number 4. 2 Timothy 3:15. I didn't read 14, now I'm going to read 15. And that you, from a child, have known the Holy Scriptures. So when do they know them? From a child. From a child. Now, he meant a young child, but really the word doesn't tell. Could be an infant. I put it way back, even as an infant, and I told you why. But I don't care when you start. It's just the earlier the better. If you can do it before they're born, even better. Which, knowing these scriptures, which are able to make you wise. What will you be if you don't know the scriptures? Not wise. Foolish. So you want to raise foolish children? Don't read the scriptures to them. Let them read Jack and the Beanstalk. You know, let them read something foolish. Nursery rhymes. Let them read stuff that is foolish. So that their imagination, Jack and the Beanstalk, is real. In their imagination. So is Jesus. Same thing. Don't read them secular stuff. Don't let them watch a lot of TV. Cut that out. We did not let our kids watch TV. We just didn't do it. So the only and when they did get big enough to watch it, you watched Little House on the Prairie with no commercials. That's it. That was one a week. That every day, I think it was on every day. You could watch that one for that 1 hour, but no commercials. And so we didn't have boppers in those days. Kara had to get up, and she had to run over to do it. Wait a minute, you listen to the commercial. Okay, no television. Okay, do it, Dad. No, I'll do it. And it's just a great way of training them. You see? It's a great way of training them. So she learned, you do not watch, and she's not questioning us, you don't watch commercials. They're noisy, for one thing. They're loud, and they're selling something. So I don't want you to hear that. You're just going to hear the story. And they're into the story, so they want to you know, do what you say, and they wait for it, and they click it right back on or go and push it. And she was good at it. I'm telling you, to this day, that girl is quick. You know, she's able to, you know, she knows how to get right on that. Four. Parents of small children, did I read all that? Make you wise unto salvation through faith which is in Christ Jesus. So saving little children is not only possible, there it is right there. Should happen. They don't have to be 12. They don't have to be 8. They can be 2 and 3. You know, we saved our kids as soon as we could. You don't know when it's going to be. And you know what will happen if you save the oldest? They'll save all the rest. The oldest one will make sure the other ones, you know, speak in tongues and everything. And they're just a little two-year-old like this. And the little kid will do it. Whatever the thing is, they'll do it because they know it was done to them. It was important. Mom and Dad told me, and I'm going to get you. And they'll come in. Mommy, Allison got saved. She did? What'd you do? And, you know, they'll tell you and so on. That's it. That is great, and you're not going to take it away. That was powerful. You might want to fill it in a little bit, find out whether she really did or not. But kids get a little eager on that. But it's okay. It's powerful because they know from a little child you've learned the scriptures and about salvation in Jesus Christ. You can go over it again. It's no big thing. But little kids are in. I mean, I'm not telling them when you get 12. Now, I hope you don't die until you get 12. I don't tell them that. Okay? From the beginning, I'm telling them, we love Jesus, and we're praying already, and they're right in on it. They're 2 and 3, and they're already right in on it. I'm not as formal as some people. You know, you got to be a believer later or whatever. You know, whenever the kids feel like they're part of the family, you're in. You know, I'm not going to tell them, you know, you're not a Christian yet. You'll be one later when you can do it for yourself. I don't tell them that. You know, they're in the covenant. Do you hear me? So I have a little different view of the covenant than a Baptist might, for example. A Baptist is going to have to wait until they're of age. I don't know about that. I'm bringing them in whenever they're ready. You're part of the family. You're part of the community. This family is holy, set aside by God. We're just going to go forward. Well, my theology could be wrong. I don't really care about it. I'm going to do it that way. I'm not going to tell them, well, your little sister died last night and she went to hell because she wasn't a Christian. I'm not going to tell them that. Or I'm not going to say she went to heaven because there's no scriptures on all that stuff. I'm not getting into all that. So I just assume that you're in this family, you're going to learn Jesus, and we're all going to pray, and they fold their hands like this, and I don't care if they have full understanding or not. As far as they're concerned, it's meaningful, and they're doing it, and they're not rebelling from it. They're accepting it, and they're trusting. And when something goes wrong, Mommy, can we pray? They are right there. They get it. That's called trust, not intellectual understanding. For a Baptist, often, and I'm not picking on the Baptist, but it's often intellectual understanding. They think faith is intellectual. It's not. Faith is heart. So whatever it is, I'll let the theologians argue about it all day long, but I don't care. I'm as smart as they are, and I know it's okay that they're included in the family. And all the alternatives are not okay, so I don't want to think all that through. Parents of small children should avoid letting children see and hear too much television, which pollutes their hearts and souls. Let children hear God's word, see pictures which remind them of God, hear Christian songs and hymns which comfort them during the day. Now, when our kids were playing, first of all, we didn't buy them anything that wasn't godly or edifying. You know, so all the stuff we had was clean. Second of all, we would play records in the background of Moses, of Daniel in the Lion's Den, And they were musical, but also they had words sometimes. And they're done. They're well done. I mean, I don't know where you get those records anymore, but they were powerful. I mean, I'm listening to them. Whoa, that is good. You know, Peggy and I were getting edified. Whether the kids were or not, it was going into them. They're just scribbling on the floor or whatever, and they're hearing all these Christian things. Where do I get this idea of saturating them with words and pictures and music and all of this? Out of the Bible. Right here. Deuteronomy. Now we're going to go back to what David was saying. Where do you get all this? It's in Deuteronomy 6. Okay, here it is. 6. That thou mightest fear, verse 2, that thou mightest fear the Lord thy God to keep all his statutes and commandments which I command thee, thou and thy son's son, that's grandsons, and all the days of thy life, and that thy days may be prolonged. Hear therefore, O Israel, and observe to do it, that it may be well with you. What? What? Do what? He hasn't told us now. And that you may increase mightily as the Lord God of the fathers has promised you in the land that flows with milk and honey. So whatever these commandments are, let's hear them. All right, here they are. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord. So that's what you're teaching children. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord. That doesn't mean not Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. What it means is Father, Son, and Holy Spirit are one. They're all one. He's one Lord. Not, you know, they're not disagreeing with each other like Aphrodite disagrees with, you know, Jupiter. Uh-uh. There's complete unity. You read any of the Greek gods, they never get along. They're always fighting with each other. They're just like people. But our God always agrees. The Father and the Son always agree. The Holy Spirit always agrees with the Son. There's no disagreement. That's why they're one. They're not one because they're just one glob together. They're one because they're Father, Son, and Holy Spirit all united, always saying the same thing, always geared to one thing. You know what it is? The holiness of God and the love of you and me. That's it. They're always united on that. And Peggy and I, as parents, were always united, even if we disagreed. And the kids could never get between us. They could never play us off one against the other. Well, Mom will do it. Uh-uh. We learned. I mean, they did get us a few times. But we quickly, I checked with Peg. Peg, now you said, she said you said it would be okay. No, I said if your father agrees. Oh, boy, they fooled me. She said, if you said that. But, you know, and so I realized the kids were playing it. And I would say, well, did your mom say it was okay? Yes, if you said it was okay. So then I'd say it was okay. And then they said, then they told her, Dad said it was okay. And so they were so clever. I don't know how they figured that out. But we caught on to that right away, and so we would check with each other. Wait, I'm talking to Mom. You have Mom come here. Dad, she said it was okay. Yeah, I want to hear her say that. And the same with Mom. You make sure, I'll talk to Dad. You're not going yet. Wait. Oh, Dad, Mom, I know it's okay. No, we're talking. So I would say, absolutely not. I thought you wanted him to do it. No, I didn't. I thought you were the one. No, it wasn't me. So, kids are clever. Kids are clever. Church members are clever. If David Halverson said it, you know, check us both. We have to check with each other. No. What did you say to her? Well, I said, you know, thus and so. Make sure we're all in one accord. All right. And thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy might. You see three things, spirit, soul, and body, right there. And these words which I command you this day, those are all the commandments and stuff, shall be in your heart. And here it is, you shall teach them diligently to your children. And you shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. What's that? Continual conversation with your children. Whether you're sitting, rising, walking, laying, sleeping, wherever you are, you're always talking to the kids about the things of the Lord. That's why everything in our house was visual, was auditory, was tactily godly. So we took down, you know, anything that wasn't. And one time, you know, for example, I'd gone to Mexico and bought these little devil things. You know how they're big in the devils down there. And then we had some ushtabis from Egypt, little bitty statues of demons, stuff. They're cute. But they were demonic. So we had to toss all that stuff out. So it wasn't in the house. So you burn it. You get rid of it. Because that's not good for kids to see that. What's that, Dad? It's a devil mask. That not belongs in a Christian home. Unless you're scaring them. Put that up over the crib. Ah! No, you don't want that. You want Jesus up there, a little friendlier than that. You don't want those kind of things. And even though they're beautiful artwork, they are horrible. So get rid of all those demons and all those devils and stuff. So we had to clean our house up. Here we are. And you shall bind them for a sign upon your hand. In other words, keep them close. And they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. And you shall write them upon the doorposts of your house and on thy gates. So verbally, visually, auditory, tactile, in every way, everything in your home. This is your private home. Speaks about God. So we had a sign on the front door. I'm sure it's still there. Jesus is Lord. Then the minute you come in the house, there's a picture of Jesus or whatever. Everything spoke of Jesus. So when those kids saw, you're not hypocrites. Everything in this house says Jesus. They don't have a Playboy laying around or something else that says something else. This is a Christian home, period. And so the kids, they felt safe in that house because parents are saying one thing and doing the same thing. Now, a lot of parents bring all kinds of trash into their home, and that television set is a great example. Most of the stuff, I'm not saying everything on television is evil, but I'm saying most of it is evil. It does not build up your spirit, man, at all, and it doesn't build up your soul, man, either. Now, the History Channel might, and there might be a few, but you're going to have to be very selective. So that's why I have a huge library today, because I went out and I bought thousands of children books. Thousands of children books. There's still hundreds of them left, but I've given a bunch to the kids and stuff, that it's about anything you can think of, but every one of them has been tested by me. I read them or I checked them over, and they're clean. So we have Heidi and, you know, Ivanhoe and all the great works that are safe. The modern stuff, none of it. I don't have any of that in the house. There's none of that stuff in there. I don't want the classic literature stuff that's written by whoever. I don't care who wrote it. If it's not about Jesus, I don't want it. If it's not edifying, I don't want it. So the Henty books is great if you had older children and so on. And I've been thinking I probably should make a list of 100 or 200 books that you should get for your children or grandchildren to read so that they're not reading Dell, you know, those little Dell things that the teachers give out and so on. They're rubbish. They got swear words in them and they got all kinds of things that are wrong. I'm telling you, there were books that were written before 1940 are clean. After the Second World War, they began to catch her in the rye and all this garbagey stuff. I don't want that for my kids. So I don't want to watch it on television. I don't want to have it in the books. I'm making a clean environment. So what the world doesn't like me? Or so what my kids grow up, you know, thinking that people, you know, have a different view of life. Good. It's a good view. I gave them the right view. There's a God. We don't believe in those movies where they never pray to God or when things fall apart they take dope or go to jail or whatever. No, we got a different ending for all ours. Jesus is the answer. Jesus is the answer. So everything in our house speaking about that. That's the way to do it. All right. Anyway, that's enough right there. The next one. As children grow older, 6 to 11. So that was 2 to 5. So I took care of the infants. I took care of 2 to 5. I showed you some books. Now, 6 through 11. This is a really important time right now. 6 through 11, because now they're in school. They're in primary school. Do not stop reading to them. Okay, they can read at 6. They learned to read by first grade, so they're reading. Jane, Ran, and Todd, you know, whatever. I don't even know what they call them. Dick and Jane. Well, we had that. I had Dick and Jane. Did anybody else have Dick and Jane? Yeah, we had Dick and Jane. I like those little pictures and so on. And I don't feel like I was deprived because I read Dick and Jane. You know, Dick ran up the hill. Jane ran up the hill too. That was great. I don't know what's wrong with those kind of stories. Today, now, you know, Dick was feeling unhappy and Jane came and comforted him. And they went to the psychiatrist and he said, the fact that you have a lesbian mother and no father is not a problem at all. You know, I don't like those kind of books. Did you hear what I just said? little bit of humor, but my point is well taken. These are crazy books these days. I'm not into all that silly stuff. As children grow older, do not stop reading to them. They need to hear you read. And by the way, you need to be finding out what they're reading. And the best way to do it is you read. You do the reading. But they still love their 11 years old. They still like mom. They still want to be close to you. They're not yet independent. So stay with them. Put them in your lap. Even though they're 11, put them in your lap still. Let them sit right there in your arms. Not bad. And they don't care. When they're 12, it's going to be difficult. But as long as they're 6 to 11, not a problem. You've got them. But at that point, you mothers are going to lose out because mothers can't adjust quickly, and you won't know what to do with a 12-year-old that suddenly has, you know, acne on his face and new chemistry flowing in his body, and he puts the same two socks on. You know he's in love. You're in trouble right now because he's going to look out to the peer group, and he no longer cares about the home. And he's going to start swearing and laughing at naughty things and bad things. Now, mothers can't usually handle that, and they try to put him down as they did when he was 11, but that 12-year-old is not that 11-year-old. They just shifted on you, and you didn't notice it, and you didn't keep up, and you're going to drive that child away. Because now you're saying to him, I'm going to withdraw my love if you don't do what I say. Not a good move on your part. You better learn to adjust, and you better have a father now who's around, or you're going to have to change and adopt a fatherly role, because they need someone more than just you telling them what to do. You can raise children to 11 years old under the law. After 11, you can't raise them under the law. You can teach them about the law, but you better have them under the gospel by then. That's why all these books get them ready for it long before they do it. It's yes and no, right and wrong law until they get to 11. Then it better be gospel. You need the power of the Holy Spirit. They better speak in tongues. They better be filled with the Holy Spirit. They better have power in their lives, because you're going to need a lot more than that when you hit that school that's in junior high and high school, where they're into drugs and into all kinds of things and experiment, and the teachers not only are doing it, they're teaching them it's okay, alternate lifestyles and all this kind of nonsense and stuff. Some lady on television last night gave her 11-year-old girl dope, or what was it, marijuana or something or other. And, you know, that's because that's what the mother's doing, and they have no brains in their head because they were raised that way themselves. And they're all doped up all the time too, so they just naturally, it just goes to the kids. So nobody's thinking today. It's a crazy world out there. And you are the only hope your children have. Forget the world. Do it your way. Don't trust the school system. Don't trust anybody. Do it yourself. Time to grow up. You got to be a man and a woman today and make your own decision as to what your house was going to be. I never let my kids say the other kids are doing it. I don't care what the other kids are doing. This is the way it is in this house. And until you're 18, 19, or 21, you're not going to do it any other way but the way I say. And you can rebel against me and win, but you're not going to like winning. It's better if you lose. So want to make a deal with me right now? Because I pay for cars. Think of that. And I pay for schooling. Think of that. And I'm not, if you're going to be rebellious and win. You want to win? Then win on your own. Because you're either going to do it my way as long as you're here, or you're going to do it your own way. Now, I'm not kicking you out, but I'm just going to tell you, while you're here, you're going to be under my strict rules and laws, even though that's because I love you. Now, I don't care about being friends with kids, and I don't care that they understand and so on. I'll make them understand. It's my job as a parent to make them understand, and you're going to do what I say. Y'all hear what I'm saying? So I'm not friendly. I don't care about friendly. I know I love them, and I know what I'm doing is the right way, and I'm just going to do it. See, I'm not insecure. I don't need, you know, them to, oh, da, da, da. I don't need that. So, besides, I know they love me, and I know they do trust me. And they love me and trust me because I'm going to obey God. I'm not doing it for them or not for them. I'm doing it because God said to do it. So I'll just trust God. That's good parenting. As a parent, you got to make a stand. That's when you make it, when they're 12. Now, I told you what I did. I'd take the kids off for 3 days, spend 3 days with them alone, tell them everything. This is how we raised you thus far. Here's how to read the Bible. Let's read it. Here's how to pray. Let's pray. Here's how to keep a journal. Let's do it. And we're just very practical. Here's how we're going to raise you for the next 8 years. And they love it. They're only 12 at that point. They're just in that delicate, tender, transitional age when they're not yet an adult and they're not yet a child. They're no longer children, but they're not adults either. They're just about to be a teen. And now that next 8 years is going to be critical. And if they rebel, they win. you lose. So you make a negotiation before they get quite there. Just before they get there, you make a deal with them. Tell you what, you want to win? You will. You want me to win? That's best for you. You want Dad to, you know, take care of everything? Stick with me, because I love you and care for you, and I'll see, but I will restrict you. You know, there's no doubt about it. But you've trusted me so far, and if I've done anything wrong, tell me, and I'll deal with you man to man. I'll deal with you woman to woman, or woman to man, or whatever. I'll deal with you on it. But let's talk. And when they're 12, they just go, that's fine, Dad, because that's a 12-year-old. I'm okay. Because, you know, we didn't have all the dope stuff, and there was no hypocrisy in me. I never lied to my kids, ever, ever. I never lied to them. So there wasn't any hypocrisy for them to rebel against. Do you understand? I never said I was Jesus. I always said Jesus was. I never said, you know, anything. I just told them the truth. You know, I'm just following Jesus, and that's the way I'm going to do it. So when you're 21, then you can eat candy. When you're 21, then you can wear mascara. When you're 21, you can wear the clothes you want. But until then, we're going to negotiate everything. And so, you know, when they would want to wear their own clothing because the other girls did, you had to check with Dad. Dad, everybody's wearing a red dress tonight. Yeah, well, you're not. Well, Dad, I'd be a freak. Then just don't go. You have to go. Then wear a blue dress. Dad! You know, so you want to negotiate or what? Because we're not just going to go and buy blue jeans that cost $70. We're going to wear the kind that come out of Sears for, you know, 11, you know, whatever the thing is. And so then we'd have these big arguments. And I didn't care if I lost. What's the loss? Because we're relating adult to adult. I'm going to win either way. Even if they win, I still win. Did you see what I just did? It's very clever. Because I'm going to fight them to show that, you know, I'm not going to give up my rule easily. Persuade me that you're more of Jesus than I am. Why does Jesus want $70 jeans rather than $11.98? And so they have to argue. Dad, Jesus would pay the $70. Okay, now tell me how he would do that. So, and they love it. And when they're done, let's say they win. I often gave in to them. Okay. So Jesus said he wanted to pay $70 of our hard-earned money just so you can be cool? Yes, Dad, that's what he said. Now, you say, I lost. Yes, I did. But I also won because now they're asking Jesus about everything. So who lost? I lost the battle, but I won the war. Did you hear what I just said? My kids were fighting me over candy eating at 18 instead of who to sleep with and how to get drunk. My kids never even got to that because they were still trying to get candy. I fought them hard over the candy. Do you understand? This is important. I put the battle where I wanted it. Let's fight over mascara. If I lose, I don't really care. But I'm fighting over it. You don't want to look like a clown. You want to just be a good Christian with natural face and so on and so forth. And then they fight me over it. Well, let's see who's right on Jesus on that one. And they had to argue their case and go and get Jesus on their side and so on. It's great. I'm just telling you. I could lose 10 of those and not feel bad at all. Because they were going to do it anyway. But I got Jesus in there on the deal. They were fighting for the mascara. I was fighting for Jesus. Did you hear what I said? So they don't care about Jesus. Okay, Jesus said I could do it, Dad. Oh, great. And I'll still fight them, but I know I'm going to lose. But actually, I win. Because I wanted them to pray and write it down in there. Show me your journal on that. Show me your journal, what Jesus actually said. Dad, okay, I didn't see. All right, that's why I'm not doing it. Okay, kid. And they'll go and get Jesus. He'll write something down. This is what Jesus said right here. You're wrong, Dad. You see, he said right here, you're wrong. I said, Jesus said that I was wrong? You know, and it's great. I'm having fun. You see, this is fun for me. But they don't know that. Are you all following me? I know you don't understand this theology, but I really don't care. I'm just telling you how it is. Jesus does it. When God is in the Bible, he does not show his true face. He puts a law face on, and you have to figure out, is Jesus a loving father or an angry judge? You do not know, because there's no way you can read the Bible and get his true face. You can't. You're confused. Wait a minute. Now, he seems to be a law guy, but he seems not to be a law guy. So which is he? And you cannot figure that out. You got to wrestle deep with that text till you get it clear. Next verse. Our next thing. Do not stop reading to them. They need to hear you, spend time with you, pray with you, talk to you, read to you, talk about God's world, talk about evil men, talk about good men, talk about His law, talk about His gospel. This is their foundation for later life. So, if you got grandkids coming, this is the way to do it. Spend a lot of time with them. Six, we're almost done. When should you buy a child their own Bible? When should you buy their own Bible? Okay, here's the answer. It's a nice gift to give to a young child. We do that. It's a nice gift to give to a young child. But most young children do not know how to take care of a highly valuable book. You see a kid with a book, they'll have that thing torn off the page, you know, and they'll be chewing on it and whatnot. So a little kid really shouldn't have a Bible, because that's not the way you should treat a Bible. Shouldn't treat any book that way. That's why I buy them plastic books or something that they can't mess up. Okay? So what we did with our kids, we didn't let the kids have the book. We held the book and then read it to them and then put it back. But if you're going to give a child, let's say in the third grade or second grade, if you're going to give them a Bible, and that's important because dad has a Bible, a pastor has a Bible, so they want their own Bible. Okay, no problem. Don't get them the best kind of Bible. Just get them a Bible. Okay? But get them one that they could hurt or ruin, but teach them how to put it somewhere. So you tell them, you bring this Bible, then put it right here on your dresser. Put it right here in this drawer. Put it right here on this shelf. Always put it back right there. Teach them how to do it. This is not just a regular book. This is very, very special. And little kids, they don't care. They want that Bible, but they don't care that you have to put it back or whatever. You're just telling them something. This is not an ordinary book. Something extremely precious and sacred. But I would not buy them a nice Bible when they're young. I would not. I would buy them a $2 Bible, a $2 Bible. I would buy them something very, easily disposable in case something happens to it. Because young children aren't old enough, and you shouldn't expect them to take good care of it. But if you can, do it. The best age is after they can read for themselves, 6 through 11, but they should read it with you, even at that age, because they can't pronounce all the words and they don't know all those crazy names. Nebuchadnezzar. They can't do it. They just can't do those big words. So it's good when they're reading, even though they know how to read, let them read it with you, because you can tell them those are aardvites. Aardvites. See, don't make them sound it out phonetically and all that stuff. Sound that word out. Now they've just lost all interest in reading the Bible, because the Bible is full of those crazy words. Right? I never did that to the kids. No way. So I'm going to let them have a Bible, and even though they're 6 to 11, they can read normal words like the and to. They can't read those big, interesting words that are in the Bible. Like he came from, wherever, Bethsaida. They can't read Bethsaida. So instead of making them fumble through it and go, bah, 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 you know, they don't do that. Or some people say, just say B, B. That's not reading the Bible. Don't do that. Tell them what the word is, Bethsaida. They can copy what you just said. That's why I read it with them. So until they're 12, I'm not into kids having their own independent Bible study. Are you hearing what I'm saying? They're not able to read all that stuff. That's too much for them. They can read most words. Now, there are some exceptions. And in those cases, like the little flood kids here in church, man, those kids can read. It's amazing. And how old are they, Mary? 8 or 7 or what? 9? Oh, they're awesome. Yeah, and a lot of these young people. But there, the parent is actually reading every day with those kids, and that's how they learned all those big words. And they seldom stumble. But those are unusual, you see. I'm okay with that. But I'm not okay letting them just fumble through. You see, I never read a book or a paragraph or a sentence without knowing everything that is in there. I read every comma. I read every word. I pronounce everything. I never just throw something off. I have a total, thorough understanding of every sentence, or I'll go back and read it 50 times until I do. So I'm not a speed reader. I am very careful, and I chew every P, and I make sure I understand every word that's there. So I have never read a book, sorry, where I don't understand at all. I will devour it. I will take whatever hours it takes to learn one word, or I'll look it up in the dictionary. I have dictionaries all around. And I'll study that thing until I understand it. I'm not interested in getting through material. And that's why it takes me forever to study scriptures. It takes me forever. Because I'll do word studies. I'll read a whole book just to get one word. I'll waste time. That's my job, my life. But I count the word of God as sacred. And therefore, I count all words as sacred. I read anything I read. I'll read it as though it was worthwhile. If it's not worthwhile, I toss the book and won't even read it. It's got to be well written, and it's got to have not too many flaws on the first page. Because if it does, I know the whole book is worthless. So it better start out with really good scholarship and sharp. I can almost tell from any book from the first paragraph whether that book's worthwhile or not. But I'm going to devour it. I don't read quickly and just get a kind of like an acquaintance with the words. I understand it to the depth, or I don't go on. I'll go back and read the whole chapter or paragraph or whatever till I get it perfectly. And all writers aren't clear. You can read it and go back and read it 100 times. They're unclear. Such a book I will not read. I'll just toss that book away because that guy's not clear. I'm reading the book right now and the guy isn't clear on every page. So I realize he's saying stuff and he's blurry all over the map. So I'm superior to this guy that's a scholar writing this because I know he doesn't know what he's talking about. You hear what I'm saying? So I won't read it anymore because I only want to read stuff that's going to teach me truth. I'm not going to read stuff that where the guy doesn't know anything about Latin or Greek or Hebrew or whatever the grammar is or anything else. I'm not going to read it. So I don't want his opinions and his ideas. I might as well read poetry or, you know, sing La La song. The best age after they can read for themselves, but they should read it with you as they pronounce the difficult words and names. A King James Bible is still the best Bible. Not New King James, not New American Standard, not Living Bible, etc. But this should be given to them with their name in it at the age of 12. Now, I just told you there could be an exception if the children are clever before that time and well-behaved. When it becomes their own Bible, teach them how to read it on their own, little by little, not too much at a time. It should be used with a daily devotional book. Now, I would start most kids off in the Proverbs or the Psalms. Why? Because they're written without a lot of knowledge in them. You don't have to stumble over, you know, stuff. I mean, everybody would like to read David and Goliath, but there's only, you know, so much of those. So there's a lot of other begat passages that would be real boring to them. And to read that for your daily devotional, no way. So you got to be careful until they're 12 and disciplined enough, show them how to read the Bible. You know, break it up into usable little things. And another way to do it is add a devotional book to it. Okay, I gave 3 devotional books here. Number 1, Andrew Murray's God's Best Secrets. That is the best devotional that I know of. Okay? Another one by Cowan, Streams in the Desert, a classic. And another one, no doubt the most popular of all, Oswald Chambers, My Utmost for His Highest. I know so many adults that are still reading that daily. And there's no question, very few people know the Andrew Murray one. But if you ever read it, you would be blessed without measure. Great book to read. It only takes 5 minutes. You read the page, that's it. It's very easy to do, but it'll change your life. Those are so well inspired, so well written. And there's others. There's a dozen. There's 2 dozen. But these are 3 good ones you could start with. And I'd buy it. I'd buy a 12-year-old any one of those 3. 7, last one. At age 12, a child should have the following books to read along with his King James Bible. Haley's Handbook. A Haley's Handbook, it was done way back in the 20s. Oh, they're great. They got maps in them. They got, you know, archaeological sites. They got church history. They got Bible. They go through every Bible book in the Bible, but real simple, not complex. It's got a nice chronology to it. It's not perfect, but it's good enough. And it's just very handy. You could learn so much from Haley's. He has gathered together stuff, and they keep it updated probably every year, but every few years for sure. I mean, I don't follow it that closely. But I got a ton of them because they're just great books. And, you know, a child could learn so much because you could look up almost anything out of Haley's Handbook. There are other great handbooks too. Baker's has a good handbook. I mean, there's, again, a dozen easily that are great handbooks. But Haley's, I would recommend as simple. It's got all kinds of stuff in it. When you read it, I love the way he puts it out so simply. It's kind of scholarly, but not super scholarly. You know, it's just well done. And be a great beginner's Bible for a 12-year-old. Be great for a 12-year-old. The Ten Commandments by Moses. Of course, it's in the Bible. But it might be good if you read Luther's Catechism, who explains each commandment in three or four sentences. Very simple. He also explains the Lord's Prayer. How do you pray? Jesus said, here's how to pray. Our Father who art in heaven. And he just teaches that. Well, that's also in Luther's little catechism, because he wrote it just for 12-year-old kids. And the last thing is the Apostles' Creed. And so the Apostles' Creed is, I believe in God the Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth, and Jesus Christ, his only begotten Son, our Lord, and so on, so on, so on, so on, so on. So it goes through Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. That's what we believe. All right? Those are the basic things over the years that any child should know. It also goes through some other two things, baptism and the Lord's Supper, but those are something else. So if you knew that, you'd have a very powerful background besides the King James Bible. You would know all that you needed to know to make it through life. But here's another book to get, a concordance. Now, most people use Strong's Concordance. I use Young's. And I use it for a certain reason, and I think my reason's better. But it's all right. Strong's, almost every book today in the world is geared to Strong's. So if you can use Strong's, you have to go back and forth and here and there. That's why I don't like it. I like it all together in one place. I read the word. I've got every word in the Hebrew on love. I got every word in the Greek on love all in one spot. I don't have to go to this page and that page and 400 next to 72 and 5,325. I don't have to do all that. So I don't like Strong's. I like Young's better. Straightforward, literal, you know, easy. And powerful. It's all right there. I got every scripture right there at my fingertips. So I always use that. But it doesn't matter to me. There are many others. Cruden's Concordance. Vines has a word, Bible word study. You know, there's lots of books you can get out there. Oh, how rich we are today. Nobody had those books in the past. We've got them. It's wonderful. And there are many books that you can use then for children when you are teaching them at 12 years and above. So today, I've taught you how to read the Bible, that you should read it from earliest time, then to get other books along the way, little kid books, medium kid books, bigger kid books, until they become adults. And here's some teenage books. Now, I read all these books, and I had David, when he was in confirmation, 12 years old, right? 12 years old, 13, 14. I had him read Prison to Praise. Did you read that one? You still have it? That's one. Oh, this book, people are still reading it to this day. We used to buy hundreds of these, by the hundreds. We'd buy them in boxes and hand them out. Prison to Praise, and then there was another one. Power and Praise? Yeah, I think so. Anyway, this is a great story. I love, when you're 12, 13, I love reading biographies. George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, you know, or Christian biographies, missionary stories. Oh, you will be so inspired. It will change your life forever. It will change your life forever. Because you're reading a story of not about doctrines, but you're reading a story about Martin Luther. Now, here I stand as too sophisticated for a 12-year-old. But when you get to college, that's when you should read that. So you got to know what age to give children books. This is a great one. You could read this one. I didn't have the other one. I got it. I just grabbed these on the way out. Crossing the Switchblade by David Wilkerson. On You. Yeah. Crossing the Switchblade. And then we went and saw the movie and so on. It's still out. It's still out. They still have a video on it you can get. Then we Run Baby Run. We read that one. God Smuggler by Brother Andrew. Oh, great. These are so inspirational. And I'm sure we read 20 of them. We just kept divvying them out to the kids. I'd go and buy them and hand them out to the kids. And every week, well, then we'd read them. It was powerful. They love it, I'm telling you. And it's inspiring. And then there's a lot of girl books, you know, books that girls also love at this age. A ton of them. And they're sometimes fictional, but they're usually historical. They're great about the Gestapo and how this girl lived under Nazi Germany but witnessed to Jesus and so on and so forth. I'll tell you what, it inspires you. And you learn a lot about the world through these Christian biographies or Christian missionaries. Look at all the missionary books of women that went on the mission field. You know, Anna, you know, who went to Siam and so on. Oh, these are great books. There's the book about Esther, If I Perish, I Perish by Thomas. Great book. There are so many books that I, because we had girls, I bought a lot of books that girls could read. Guy books are more, you know, powerful and so on, but girls like them too, because we were all reading them. We were reading all those books. Oh, this is a adult book, but you could read it as a young person. Tozer, Pursuit of God. It's a holiness book. How many have read this book? Yeah, quite a few. It's a very, very powerful book. Simple, small, and you can read them. They're not going to read any big tome, you know, War and Peace. Don't give them that one. But they'll read these small books. Here's one, Oswald Chambers, Spiritual Maturity. Simple. It's not very long, but they could read it quickly. And here's a great book, Answers to Prayer by George Mueller. He had an orphanage in London. Oh, you love it. Now, I'll bet I have 700 books like this, all little bitty books like this. They are awesome to read. I read them. I love them. I even read them to this day with great, I mean, they inspire me now. William Carey, you know, Adoniram Judson going to India and all these places, China, Hudson Taylor, David Livingston. And I gave my kids all these books, my own children. But also, we got them to the confirmation, but they only got, you know, a dozen or so. But I wanted my kids to read all these. Why? Because it'll never leave you. Once you get these books in you, these are people that were touched by Christ and lived an exemplary life in the world out there. Powerful stories. There's Mere Christianity by C.S. Lewis. But that's later when you're in college, you know, when you're in the last year of high school, perhaps. But these books are for young people. And as I said, we have dozens and dozens of them. And I could make a 100, I could make a list of 100 books. But here is something you could have for an 11, 12-year-old, 13-year-old, all the Henty books. I believe there's 150 of them, but it doesn't matter. But Henty makes all these books, and this one is called Saint Bartholomew's Eve. It's when they killed all of the Protestant in Paris. All the Protestants were killed. Great book. It's written in big, nice, clean type. And there's usually beautiful pictures in it. I don't think this one has pictures. But most of the Henty, all the Henty books have pictures. Let's see if this one does. No, maybe there's a picture there. I don't know. Anyway, Henty is now republished. But you used to be able to get them, and you can still get them in the old used bookstores. But they cost too much. But you can buy new ones now. And they've just republished them. Great for young boys, but for girls too. But they have all the stories about heroism and America's founding. All written for Christians, all written for people that love God, people that believe in truth. So tons of books out there that are available that were never available when I was younger. You just couldn't get them. And then they burned them and destroyed them in most libraries. That's why I have 40,000 books. Because I don't like that destroying. And they get rid of them in libraries. I go and buy them. When they'd thrown them out, I want all those old books because those are the ones that were well written. Oh, they were well written. So inspirational. Today they won't mention God in any book. It's against the law for them. They won't do it. So I went and bought them all. I got tons of them. And that's because I'm telling you, one way to destroy a nation is to take away its culture, its heritage. And they now are censoring, used to censor wicked books, now they censor Christian books. They don't want Christian books to be there. Or they'll be the most superficial kind. These are inspirational. Child raising has a lot to do with what they read, what you're putting into them. First of all, the Bible. Second of all these Bible books. Third of all these books about people that lived in our day up until now over church history, last 2,000 years, tell about their story. But even before that. So now you got the whole world at your fingertips. You can read all these great stories. Again, most of you don't have children anymore, but you have grandchildren. So, you know, Christmas time, buy these kind of books for them. You know, whatever age they are, and you can hand them on. We still do it. Our kids come and they loot us. You know, they come in there and Carl will just say, Dad, can I have some of these? Yeah, sure. Pretty soon she's got the whole thing and just taking it home with her. It's good.